The Initial Reaction Podcast, living in the aftermath of a world where Marquette has defeated the number one team in the country. Got a very special co-host for you today. JP Kadoran is gone. He's going to watch Red Wings hockey, making some weirdo pilgrimage. So in his place, I have Matt Velasquez of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers the Golden Eagles and the Milwaukee Bucks for the hometown newspaper, and he's one of the more popular people in media right now this morning as we tape this on Wednesday, because lots of people want to talk about Villanova Marquette. Last night, Matt, are you, has your cell phone stopped ringing, fielding all these calls from all these people that want a little piece of the Matt Velasquez puzzle?
Yeah, it's been a little bit crazy. I mean, ever since that game ended, it's been, you know, it's kind of go, go, go there for a couple hours on deadline and all that. And then Twitter obviously has been pretty crazy. I didn't know that the notifications on Twitter, like the little red number, will show up as like 50 or more. And I've never been in that situation.
Yeah.
I started the day doing radio in Seattle, which kind of took me by surprise. But that's where we are, I guess.
Why does Seattle care about the Big East? That seems like a contradiction right there.
Well, it sounded like they were doing a segment on all the different upsets in college basketball last night, with Kansas going down and Villanova and Kentucky all losing. You know, so I think that they had a guy from Kansas on right before me. So I think that they're just trying to show the love all around the country, talk national, you know, college basketball landscape, and that's fine. I'm down with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I had the absolute great luck of covering this game for an outlet in Philadelphia. So I was sitting two seats over from you as this game was unfolding. And I got to think, with about 11 minutes to go in the game, there's no way you could have foreseen yourself on a radio station in Seattle or anywhere else for that matter the following morning. Because, dude, this game was over. It was over from the beginning. Marquette looked terrible out of the gate. They weren't much better shortly into the second half. Midway through the second half, it was still a 15-point game. Josh Hart had foul trouble early, but was back on the floor. Like, there's no way Marquette should have won that game. I'm trying to put my finger on what happened in those last 11 minutes, because I honestly can't point to one or two things other than to say Villanova just could not make a shot, and Marquette got into a rhythm where they really didn't miss very many. I mean, what would you point to as the big reason Marquette pulled that off?
Well, I mean, you're right in saying that Villanova missed shots, and some of that is because those shots were pressured and they were difficult shots. You know, they're settling for threes, and there's something to that. You know, they went 6 for 34 from 3-point range, which is just mind-boggling. You know, and so that's definitely big. But then, you know, you look at Marquette, and they turned up the heat offensively in the second half after a really poor first half showing on both ends. You know, usually you don't get too many bad offensive halves from Marquette. They're among the best and most efficient offensive teams in the country. You know, of course, Villanova is one of the best and most efficient defensive teams in the country. So, you know, there's a little give and take there. But then after that, Marquette started to get into a rhythm. They were 16 for 23 in the second half. You know, 1.56 points per possession, which is just bonkers. And you know, they with 5.5 minutes left, they just, what really happened was they took out Luke Fisher, and they went with a 5-man kind of smaller lineup with Dwayne Wilson, Hanif Cheatham, Juwan Johnson, Caton Reinhart, and Sam Hauser. And their 1-3-1 defense was able to move around a little bit better. Their offense, you know, there's no presence in the paint. It's all five guys who can shoot, who can dribble, who can spread the court out. And that kind of made things difficult for Villanova to guard. I mean, Dwayne Wilson got them going with a three, then had a nice stop-and-go, you know, hesitation move for a layup. And then Caton Reinhart got hot and made a tough jumper and a three-pointer to tie the game. Not to mention Sam Hauser knocking down a big three that, you know, caused Villanova to call timeout. So, you know, the offense just kept going, and the defense just kept getting stops. And, you know, once Marquette got that momentum, it just didn't slow down.
You're talking about some guys that I don't know if we would have suspected playing a big role in a game like this. Marcus Howard was a non-factor. 0 points, 5 fouls, 7 minutes. Just a total non-factor. And the amazing thing is he was by far the best player when the two teams met the first time, even though Villanova blew out Marquette. I mean, he was their best player. So you're talking about Reinhart, who has come on strong lately. You're talking about Dwayne Wilson, who's had a very interesting career arc. I mean, the freshman Sam Hauser hits the big shot. And they're using a 1-3-1 zone that they just don't use. I mean, you were saying to me last night that you've never seen it this year. Jay Wright said after the game for Nova that he did see it when they beat Creighton 3 days earlier. So at least they were experimenting with it. They brought it out in the first half, and it lasted for, what, 15 seconds before Villanova called timeout, readdressed some things. It wasn't particularly effective initially, and then it was everything. And, I mean, Wilson's such a big part of this. I'm curious your thoughts on him and his season, because he went from a pretty highly recruited guy to sort of an exciting young player to a guy who sort of slipped out of, not out of the rotation, but definitely into the lower part of the rotation. And he had such a huge game against Nova. 11 points, the big three-pointer, big free throws, and a key part of that zone. I mean, I don't know if they win that game without Dwayne Wilson last night.
Yeah, you know, and I must have forgotten about the 1-3-1 at Creighton because they didn't use it very much. I think it was one of those situations where you trot it out there for a couple plays and it doesn't go great, and then you pull back. So that wasn't really their main defense, but, you know, it worked, you know, when it needed to work on Tuesday night. You know, it's funny because for most of the second half, you know, fans all around me, as Marquette kept giving up offensive rebound after offensive rebound, you know, the fans around me were just yelling, "Get out of the zone, get out of the zone," and Twitter's blowing up, "Get out of the zone, get out of the zone." And it's like, well, you know, they played man, they played the 1-3-1 in the first half, and then, you know, Jay Wright calls the timeout, Marquette comes out in a 2-3 zone, and immediately gets destroyed, and they go back to man. You know, so they're trying all these different things, and, you know, the 1-3-1 ended up being the thing that they were most comfortable with. You know, Wojo said his players had confidence in that defense and in each other playing that defense, and so that's why they rolled with it and they stuck with it. And what it also achieved was it gave Villanova just enough temptation from beyond the 3-point arc.
Yes.
They were just open enough where they were like, you know what, I'm going to shoot this corner three that's normally a pretty decent high percentage shot, you know, thinking that they were a little bit more open than they were, because when they attacked the paint, they were great. You know, in the first half, Villanova was, you know, just killing it in the paint. I mean, I think they were 13 for 17 inside the arc in the first half and 8 for 16 in the second half. So when they got inside the arc, they shot a good to very good percentage, you know, but they got tempted into those threes. And you know, obviously the question here is about Dwayne Wilson. You know, he has had an interesting kind of career arc. You know, he comes in, highly touted recruit. He redshirts a year due to injury. He comes back, and that first year was kind of a lost season for Marquette. You know, that was Wojo's first year. They had 8 scholarship players. You know, there were times when a couple of them were hurt, and their bench was really depleted. And he played a ton of minutes. He was one of the few guys who was willing to actually, you know, want the ball in his hands at the end of games and wanted to take big shots and wanted to try and score and create and do things. And then last year, you know, he started to take a different role with the recruiting class that came in. You know, Hanif Cheatham came in, was a starter from day one. And Dwayne, you know, wasn't really fitting perfectly as a starter inside as a point guard or as a shooting guard, especially with Cheatham being there and Tracy Carter coming in and just all the different looks they were doing. So he had to kind of come off the bench, and he was fine with that role. And he got good minutes, and he was part of the rotation, and he was involved, and he was fine. And this year, you know, he's actually kind of slipped back even further into the rotation because you have Andrew Rousey, who can shoot the ball so well and run the point, you know, coming in after redshirting. You have Marcus Howard, who, you know, for most games has been just an absolute sensation, you know, as a freshman, and the way he can shoot and drive and kick and all the different things he can do. And then you add in, you know, Reinhardt and Juwan Johnson, who's been there, and Sam Hauser. All these guys are playing at such a high level at both ends that it's hard for Wilson to crack through and get, you know, significant minutes. But when he's gotten in, you know, he's provided a pretty calm and steadying presence. You know, he knows that his job is to come in and bring energy and just play tough defense and smart defense, and he's done that really well. And, you know, in games like last night, he showed up at the end, and he showed that same killer instinct that he's had in the past, and especially that he showed during his freshman year, where at the end of the game he's not afraid to take a big shot or to drive in traffic and try and finish and either draw a foul or actually do finish, you know. So he, you know, Mojo mentioned after the game last night, that was great to see him get rewarded in that way, that he was able to, you know, go out there, play, and make a major difference in one of the most meaningful games that Marquette's seen in some time.
Tell me a little bit about Caden Reinhart. A lot of Marquette fans sort of, Marquette fans know this guy through and through, but people who haven't paid close attention to this team aren't going to know a lot about him. He's a graduate transfer from USC, really struggled in the early part of the season. I mean, three-point shooting is his forte. There's no secret. This is what he brought to the table against Creighton, and then again, certainly against Villanova. He was sort of the star of the show down the stretch, 18 of 19 after halftime. Had the big free throws with 11 seconds left that gave them the final advantage. So what has changed for him, if anything? I mean, is it just was he just not fitting into the scheme in the early going, or just not shooting well? I mean, was it as simple as that in the early going?
Well, yeah, actually, I just wrote a story for the Journal Sentinel that's online now, so everybody can go
Ooh,
and
check that out.
Yeah, so I wrote about Caden Reinhart and kind of his evolution and resurgence over the course of the season, because one of the things that, you know, he didn't shed light on until, you know, January 1st after the game against Seton Hall was, you know, he'd been dealing with a right Achilles injury since the scrimmage in the preseason against Dayton. And, you know, he had that soreness, it was lingering, and he tried to play through it. And while he was doing that, you know, it was altering his abilities. You know, he wasn't getting as much lift on his three-pointers. He wasn't jumping as high. And so everything else was mechanically right, and it felt good, but the shots weren't going down. It felt very strange to him, and he was trying to work through it. And, you know, he didn't want to miss any time. He thought he was good enough to play. And, you know, after he missed one game due to illness, and then for the last two non-conference games, they sat him down. They gave him, like, 17 days to rest and kind of get healthy. And he kind of shook some rest off against Georgetown. But then since the calendar flipped to January, you know, he's been great. You know, starting with that Seton Hall game, even though they lost, he was great in that. And he was a reason why that they were close. And over the past, you know, 20 days, 3 weeks, you know, he's been one of their most consistent players and has showed up all over the court. You know, on Creighton, against Creighton, he was tasked with bringing the ball up the court for a lot of the second half against their full court pressure, and he handled that. And he distributed, a season-high 7 assists in that game while scoring 21 points, you know, to help Marquette earned that big road win. And then, the Villanova game, he had a quiet first half, you know. But then in the second half, when they needed someone to step up offensively and kind of get things going, he was able to do that. And he hit some big threes. You know, he made a jumper late in the game, followed by a three that tied the game. And then he made the two free throws that won it. And so, you know, he's taken a lot of heat from Marquette fans. And he's heard it and he's seen it. And he knows that, you know, that what's been said about him and what people thought about him during the early parts of the season. But, you know, he just kept working. He got healthy. You know, he had the trust of the coaching staff. And, you know, now he's starting to turn things around and reap the benefits. You know, and during Big East play, he's, like I said, he's been one of Marquette's most consistent players. He's first on the team in assists during Big East play, 3.1 a game. He's second in points, 13.9 a game, you know, and he's getting about 28 minutes off the bench, and he's relished that role. And during Big East play, he's made 50% of his shots and 44% of his threes. I mean, you can't ask for much more of the guy.
Yeah, and that Creighton game, which was a great game for him and really for everybody. Everybody was clicking. I think they hit half their three-point shots, 12 of 24. It was easy to even as great as a Big Ten, a top 10 road win is, so easy to classify that as a fluke, because Creighton was playing their first full game without Maurice Watson. You know, All-American guard goes down, and you figure they're reeling a little bit, trying to figure out their rotation a little bit now. So as great as Marquette played, it was easy to write that off. And I don't know if you saw something in that previous game against Butler where they had just an incredible first half against Butler and then faded down the stretch. If you saw signs that this Marquette team was turning a corner, because there are a lot of points during this year where it seemed like any talk of Marquette making the NCAA tournament was foolish. And now after the Creighton game, which has sort of a retroactive shine to it because they went ahead and beat Villanova 3 days later, now you start to say to yourself, this is a very good team. We know they've got a lot of offensive firepower. I guess, Did you expect that they could be this good? That they are the best team that Wojo has had the last, you know, in his 3-year tenure, or has this caught you by surprise?
Well, I did expect that this would be the most talented and best overall team that Wojo has had while he's been at Marquette. I thought that this team, the sum of their parts, would be better than the sum of the parts last year. Obviously, Henry Ellenson was great, and he remains, I would say, at this moment in time, more talented than anyone that Marquette has on its current roster. But the way the roster is this year, I thought that the combination of those guys would be better. And that, you know, I didn't know if the record would match that. You know, I didn't expect coming into the season, especially considering how good Creighton is and how good Villanova continues to be, that, you know, we'd be talking about back-to-back wins over those teams at this point in January. But I thought they had a chance to be good. I mean, I thought that this was a year where they could and should and needed to get back to the postseason. I didn't know if that would be NIT or NCAA tournament. For a little while there, it looked like the NIT was more likely, but now it seems like the NCAA tournament is definitely a real possibility, and it's almost probably even a likelihood. You know, and going back to that Butler game, you know, I think people forget when we talk about the Butler game how good Marquette played in the first half, or how well they played in the first half. You know, they were up by 16, and they were controlling that game, you know, without any question. Their defense was maybe played the best half it's played all year, even with these two wins included in that. They played great in that half, and they challenged everything. They were aggressive, but they were smart, and they didn't foul, and they kind of just, you know, kept everything in front of them and really made things hard for Butler. And on offense, you know, they did what they normally do. They put up 41 points and you know, kind of bombs away. But then in the second half, that's when everything changed. You know, you thought they were turning a corner, and then they turned the corner and ran into a brick wall.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like an inverse of the Villanova game, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they give up 63 points in that second half, which is dreadful. That's just terrible. I mean, you just don't see that very often in high major competition. And, you know, while they were playing that poorly on defense, their offense was doing basically nothing. And so, you know, they couldn't shoot their way out of that. And that was a problem. And, you know, at Creighton, Greg McDermott, the head coach over there, you know, he mentioned after the game that Marquette could easily be a one-loss Big East team at this point. You know, they could have beaten Seton Hall on the road at Seton Hall.
They should have, absolutely.
They had the lead, and they had the opportunity late, after battling, you know, back and forth in the second half, to put themselves in that position, and they couldn't finish. They couldn't get the offense or the defensive rebounds when they needed them, and then they could have beaten Butler. They had Butler on the ropes, and then they kind of wilted in the second half. But, you know, it wouldn't be. No one would say, "Oh, I'd be shocked if Marquette had won the Seton Hall game," or "I would have been shocked if they had won the Butler game," because they had opportunities to win both of them. So. You know, they're playing above all expectation right now, and considering that they have both games against Villanova behind them, they've already played Butler on the road and Creighton on the road. You know, they have a lot of opportunities now with the rest of the Big East schedule to really tack on some wins and put themselves in a great position for the Big East tournament and beyond.
Yeah, that schedule definitely opens up for them going forward. And I even wrote a sidebar for CSN Philly about Marquette sort of rising into the elite status of the Big East, which is already one of the best conferences in basketball. I think it's really gotten that reputation this year, but deservedly so, because you've had Creighton, Creighton, Villanova, and Butler in the national rankings. Xavier's considered one of the better programs out there as well, and now you got to throw Marquette into the ring. How big of a win was this for Steve Wojciechowski? And he'll not say it. He'll deflect and say it's about the players and everything, but I don't know if you get a sense. I wasn't close enough to the program to get a sense that there's a little bit of impatience that's going to build when you're into a third year, looking like you're trending toward not appearing in the NCAA tournament. I think that would have been 4 years overall in a row for Marquette if they don't make the tournament this year. Do you sense that this was an important milestone in his coaching tenure here at Marquette?
Yeah, well, you're right. He would say that it's all about the players and all about that. He's been around and involved in involved with teams that have been number one, have beaten number one, have won national championships, and all that. But you know, getting that first huge win, there's no question about it. This isn't a Creighton situation where Watson didn't play. You know, this is a bona fide, you know, huge win over the number one team in the country. You know, with a team that they just outworked Villanova. They did what was necessary to get the job done, and I think it helps legitimize everything that Wojo's done. Not that it, you know, that things were illegitimate or negative in any way, but it helps kind of relax the fan base and kind of show them, hey, this team, you know, you could have argued for a long time they were trending upward, and this is a definitive point where no one's going to argue that Marquette is not trending upward. They're trending upward. They're moving forward. They're playing well. You know, they can hang it with and beat the best teams in the country. And, you know, that's a step forward. You know, it's something to point to for recruiting and to build on for the future. And it's great. I think overall the angst was more from the fan base. I don't think the athletic department or the university had any issues with him. They obviously gave him that extension last year.
Right, right.
And so I think they believed in what he was trying to do and the way he was trying to do it. And now I think it helps get the fan base a little more energized, a little more involved, a little bit more on board, which is always positive.
I think one of the underrated moments that sticks out for me from this game was early, very early in the first half, Josh Hart commits a really silly touch foul on Luke Fisher. Fisher goes up, scores, gets to shoot a free throw. Hart's on the bench for the rest of the first half. Now, that did not matter for Villanova at the time. They built their lead. They kept their lead. Jalen Brunson was playing great. Michael Bridges had a career-high 20 points for them. I mean, they were fine. And then Hart comes back on the floor to start the second half, and he's fine. He scores 9 quick points in the second half. So that's not where the problem was. But just the fact that Hart had the foul thing hanging over his head, because he did get his third foul pretty quickly. And then he got his fourth foul relatively early. And Daryl Reynolds had 4 fouls. And I just wonder, because Hart is the type of player, he's a guard, but he also does a lot in the paint. He's a very good rebounder. You know, he's got great moves toward the basket. I just wonder if that sapped their aggressiveness ever so slightly and caused them, like you talked about at the beginning, those shots they were taking, just surprising. Even in crunch time, they were still taking threes. They had guys lining up shooting threes, and none of them went in. So Marquette had a chance to pull away. And another thing that was underrated is Marquette's rebounding down the stretch, because they were not winning the rebounding battle for that entire game. And then all of a sudden, with the game on the line, they were getting to every single defensive rebound. Every single ball was in their hands. And I think they ended up winning the rebounding battle by 1 or something like that. But Villanova looked like the better rebounding team the entire game. The zone had a lot to do with that. But then down the stretch, man, Marquette came up with the ball every time, and they were, you know, had the chance to hit the game-winning shots.
Yeah, and that's something that hadn't happened in other games, you know, and they proved that they could do it. And then that was part of showing that they belong and showing that they can take it and bounce back from adversity within a game and from game to game. And, yeah, it was just a strong overall performance, you know, during those final 5.5 minutes when they found a way to win.
What is your take on the crowd? I wasn't focused too much on this, but there are always rumblings when Marquette doesn't sell out for a big game like this. And I think it's understandable why they, even though they're playing the number one team in the country, it's the middle of the week. Marquette hasn't been an elite team to this point until recent weeks. So I can understand it. But I tell you, like, I don't go to a lot of Marquette games, but that crowd was insane, man. In the first half when they pulled it within a point, the place was rocking. Certainly in the second half, even when they were within 9, they got it to single digits, the place went up for grabs. I thought the crowd was excellent. They were definitely on the officials for some officiating as well. I mean, the crowd was really, really energized. When you hear discussion about, well, they didn't sell out, do you see what I see? Do you see, man, the crowd brought it. I don't care how many people were there, because the ones that were there were loud. Or is it a concern that Marquette isn't able to sell out these types of games?
No, I think winning puts butts in seats. And
yeah,
so,
no doubt.
You know, outside of the Wisconsin game, which obviously gets sold out every time it's at the Bradley Center, this was actually number 3 on their attendance for the season.
Really?
With the other one, you want to guess what the other one was?
Let me think about that. I got nothing. Tell me.
It was the Big East opener against Georgetown.
Really? Which, that surprises
so that,
me, too.
So that one apparently had 14,886. Last night, we had 14,210.
Okay.
And so it was a little bit less, but there's no way. I mean, I would hazard to guess just from my memory, which could be off, but I don't think that Georgetown game was as populated.
Well, it didn't feel like it.
As well as, yeah, I mean, there's certain season ticket holders that might not have shown up even though they were counted. I just don't remember it being as large of a crowd. Definitely nowhere near the level of excitement. That crowd was special. It was something different. It's something that, you know, we just haven't seen at the Bradley Center a ton over the past few years, you know. And I, like I said, you know, when you have a team that's not winning as much, you know, there's going to be a little bit of apathy. Current students haven't been around for the good years. They're not. They don't know like a basketball team that is achieving at the level that Marquette's achieving right now. And so, you know, it's hard to, you know, get excited for a Tuesday game against the number one team. And I know some people might say, oh, it's the number one team. You're a school where basketball is the number one sport. You know, you got to go out there. But you have to remember that Marquette is, I don't know exactly what their enrollment is, but it would take basically half of their student body, their undergraduate student body, to fill up the student section. That is, yeah. That's huge. And so, you know, there have been plenty of years where that's not been a problem. You know, but when you're on a stretch like they've been on, where they haven't made the NCAA tournament and they've struggled and they're rebuilding, you've got to earn that back. And I think that the win over Creighton, even though it was on the road, and then the win over Villanova have helped, you know, move things in the right direction, or will help move things in the right direction. And I'm interested to see how many people show up for Saturday's game against Providence as kind of a, an overflow effect from the Villanova game.
Yeah, that'll be a fascinating game, and we've seen this with the Milwaukee Bucks this year, where you get a big win and you follow it up with a not-so-spectacular performance. So I'll be very curious to see how they do against Providence. Yeah, you forget how weird it is to have a small private school – not small, but private school playing in an NBA arena. It's sort of an unusual arrangement, how difficult it is to get people in the seats.
Yeah, I mean, you see it around the Big East. I mean, Seton Hall for – most games curtains off its upper level. You know, Georgetown has had struggles with winning, and also struggles with putting people in the Verizon Center and filling it up and getting student interest going. And that's, you know, a tradition, or a school steeped in as much tradition as any in the country.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. And so, you know, Villanova, obviously they had no problems filling up the Wells Fargo Center. When I was there for the Marquette game back in early January, which was their first game at the Wells Fargo Center this season, because they're coming off a national championship. Of course people are going to go to those games. Of course there's going to be a high level of interest and excitement. You know, and it kind of goes on and on. With And you see it everywhere in the Big East. So it's not unique to Marquette, and it's not even unique to the Big East, really. But it's just something that happens. When you win, people come.
Yeah, and to see the court stormed the way it was, just a flood of people in the Bradley Center. They were there for 20 minutes after the buzzer sounded. It was surreal. It was impossible not to get goosebumps. I liked Steve the Homer True, who calls the games, his radio call, saying they should storm the floor. It's so funny because it's easy to moralize about the idea of court storming, and then you see a moment like that transpire in front of your eyes, and it's like, gosh, I can't imagine it any other way, right? Like, that's just such an uplifting, crazy moment. And it wasn't violent. Doesn't sound like anybody got hurt or anything. That's beside the point ultimately if you're talking about safety. But it's still, I just can't imagine the sport of college basketball without court storming. It feels like, I'm not a tradition guy, but it feels like one of those things that you just cannot take away from the game. And you see all the pictures and just, you know, clicking through photo galleries, looking at the players up on top of press row. I mean, that just it honestly gives me chills. I'm not a big Marquette guy, and it gives me chills looking at that stuff. It was such a fun environment.
Yeah, no, it was great. I've never been to a game where they've stormed the court. You know, I've been to, you know, games all over the place, and, you know, in fun atmospheres, but nothing like that. And it was good. I mean, one of the things that I noticed was, you know, right when the buzzer went off, you know, Caden Reinhart runs over to Wojo, gives him a big hug, and then Wojo immediately starts, like, quickly moving across the court to try and steer students away from the Villanova bench and the Villanova players. You know, and he said in his postgame that, you know, he's been in games where the court's been stormed on the positive side and on the negative side. And he knows that, you know, the first rule of business is making sure that the losing team, you know, is safe and gets off the court, you know, in a safe manner. And it's just a fun situation instead of being a dangerous one. And so he made sure of that first. And after that was, you know, that was done, then he could celebrate with his play, you know, with his players and his coaching staff. So, you know, it was good for him to make sure that, you know, he looked out for Villanova first. And I'm sure Marquette, you know, the Big East has rules in place to deal with court storming, and they assess fines, which they did the last time Villanova lost. They did so at Butler, and Butler was fined $5,000, and they donated it to a charity of their choice. So I'm sure Marquette will have no problem making a $5,000 charitable donation in exchange for, you know, a priceless moment like the one that they had on Tuesday night.
I'm sure that's the case. I tell you what, I had one of those journalist nightmare moments. This is something I actually have nightmares about, where my computer, I had some tech problems at the end, couldn't send the story. And by the time I got down to the workroom, Jay Wright, who his postgame was about 2 minutes long, he was just finishing up. So I had no quotes. So I ran through the stadium and the underbelly of the stadium to get over to the locker room to try and get some additional stuff from Jay Wright. That guy is awesome. That guy is one of the coolest dudes. And it's not hard to tell that. Watching him give press conferences and the big moment where Chris Jenkins hits the three-pointer last year to win the national title, he sort of coolly turns around like, yeah, no big deal, goes to shake hands. That guy is fantastic. I've always liked him, and I got to tell you, I'm going to cheer a little bit for Villanova, not when it comes to battling head-to-head with Marquette or any other teams I may care about, but I'm going to cheer for that team to do well because that coach is great. What a great dude. I don't know if you've dealt with him in the past, but... Yeah, he's awesome.
I haven't dealt with him any more than any other Big East coach, but I can tell you that he got a lot of kudos on Twitter last night because after the game he tweeted out, you know, great atmosphere at the Bradley Center, classic Big East battle, congrats to Marquette, you know, and, you know, right. It just shows, you know, one, what we already know, that he's a guy with a lot of class, but two, he knows, you know, that this is bigger than just his school. It's about building the Big East. It's about, you know, making sure that, you know, the conference is shown in a good light, you know, and so he was around for the quote old Big East and now the new Big East, and he's saying, hey, this is a classic Big East battle. This is what Big East basketball is all about. And everybody who talks about, oh, well, Big East basketball was great back in the day, you know, this is not gone. It's still there, you know, and, you know, congrats to Marquette, you know, so that he's playing the PR really, really well there. You know, he's pushing the league, and he's emphasizing, you know, that Marquette played a great game, which, you know, I think it's just a really classy move by him. And it's interesting. I've seen conversations on Twitter and elsewhere where Marquette fans have kind of found it hard to hate any other team in the Big East so far.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, all the teams are really good and the coaches are good and there's no real rivalries yet. Like, you would think that maybe like Marquette and DePaul would be a rivalry, but DePaul just hasn't been good enough, you know, so they're still, even though the Big East is not totally new, you know, and Marquette's one of the carryovers from the previous version of the conference, there still isn't that, you know, that fire between specific teams. Obviously they go hard against each other all the time, but there aren't really specific rivalries or specific rivals for Marquette yet, and we'll see what happens there, because I know that when I was out in Omaha, you know, the radio folks in Creighton said, hey, this could be a rivalry, this could be something, like maybe it turns into something. They've had close games for the past couple of years, they're kind of close in proximity. It's like, well, yeah, you could talk about it possibly being a rivalry, but until something happens and until that heat turns up, you know, that's when you get a real rivalry. So we'll see what happens.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about the other team that plays in the Bradley Center. You saw the Milwaukee Bucks and do see the Milwaukee Bucks working, covering them as well for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You saw the Monday night play the Houston Rockets, a very good team, and the Bucks once again delivered against a great team. They
They beat the Rockets, then have to face the Philadelphia 76ers on Wednesday. That's a team without Joel Embiid in this particular go-around. Sixers got them with Embiid the first time around, although an Embiid-less Sixers team defeated the Clippers just this, you know, the night before. So I'm not sure if we can say for sure that that team is not going to be dangerous. But here's the thing everybody says about the Bucks. I'll let you decide. You can tell me if this is something that matters to you. The whole idea of consistency. I know that's important in sports in general. You've got a team that wins these big games. They'll win at San Antonio. They'll beat the Knicks at the buzzer, then lose to the Knicks two nights later at home. Lose to teams that they should beat. Ultimately, I wonder if you think that matters. Because ultimately, this team is probably still going to go to the playoffs. And if they don't, that's another problem. But if they do, they're going to face one of the top two or three teams in the East. And at that point, they're playing really good teams the rest of the way. And so how they perform against those teams, I guess, probably should be held in higher regard than how they play overall consistency-wise. Do you see the Bucks' inconsistency as a major, major stumbling block yet? Or is this a team that should be considered really dangerous if it gets to the postseason?
I don't think it's a major stumbling block, but it is a stumbling block. It's an issue. You know, they haven't played, you know, well in long stretches, you know, and obviously there's other teams playing and it's not just going to be a cakewalk all the time. And, you know, you're not going to get home games all the time. And it's harder to win on the road. At least they've shown it's harder to win for them on the road. And, you know, it's definitely an issue, but we're still dealing with a team that is, you know, relatively young and relatively kind of new and kind of still coming together. You know, you're also looking at a team that doesn't have Chris Middleton, and he's a major part of what they do. Tony Snell has stepped up in a big way to kind of try and bridge the gap between the time when Middleton went down and the time that he'll come back. But he's still not Chris Middleton. I mean, Chris Middleton's one of the 40 best players in the NBA right now, or at least he's considered as such. And so you're going to have some ups and downs with the team. And, you know, especially a team that's led by two guys who are in their early 20s. You know, they're still figuring out how to win, and these are kind of the dog days of the season before the All-Star break where, you know, you're not practicing as much and guys are starting to, you know, feel the effects of the season a little bit. And they're still kind of trying to figure out exactly who they are, what they're going to be, and how this is going to go. I kind of thought for a while that something like this might be coming, not necessarily because of the inconsistency, but just because the first part of their season was easier, strength schedule-wise. And so, you know, sure, they had some tough games in the early going there, but they got out to a pretty good start, you know, not facing the toughest schedule. And now that's starting to ramp up, and they've shown up against some of the best teams, but, you know, there have been those letdowns, and we'll see what a more road-heavy slate, you know, leads to for the Bucks, considering they're not as good away from the Bradley Center.
What is your impression of the Bucks defensively? It seems like in the offseason they went out and tried to address some things, like they had trouble defending three-point shooters last year. Team shot a very high percentage. They brought in a guy like Matthew Dellavedova. It was thought that guys like, you know, Jabari Parker would take a step forward defensively, and he has, but they still seem to have some of the same problems. Are you sensing that this team is ready to take a leap forward defensively, or that we're always going to sort of have these lapses with the Bucks?
Well, I mean, I think that they've been okay defensively. They haven't been great. They haven't been, you know, drastically changed. But when you look at, you know, what they're doing defensively, you know, they're actually allowing more points per game this season than they were last season. And granted, last season's more of a sample size. You know, and this season, there's still time to turn that around. It's about, you know, 1 point more. But right now, in terms of the Eastern Conference, or actually if you look at the whole NBA, you know, they're 11th in points allowed per game, you know, and they've made up for that by, you know, scoring at a pretty high clip, and they actually do have a positive point differential. And so, you know, that is a positive because, you know, if you want to make it into the playoffs, you know, more often than not, you need to be a team with a positive point differential. You know, so we'll see if they can continue to improve at that end. I think Giannis individually has improved in his ability to anchor the defense in the situations where they play him at the five. I think Greg Monroe individually has improved on defense. He's definitely hustling a lot more, playing harder, you know, adding more at that end. Jabari Parker is no longer a major liability at that end. He's not great, but he's better. You know, so you look at individually, you know, the Bucks have improved. I think they miss Middleton there because he was a steady wing defender and a guy you could put on another team's top wing. And then they don't have that. Snell's been very good. You know, I feel like I've said this multiple times. Like, Snell's been a very good replacement for Middleton, but he's still not Middleton. He's not at the level that we would expect Middleton to be at. You know, so I think over the course of time, if the Bucks, you know, can continue to coalesce, you know, those individual improved performances into strong, you know, team defense, that'll work out well for them.
Yeah, Snell, of course, had that great defensive performance against Russell Westbrook when the Bucks beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, another one of those high-profile victories that we're talking about. Matt, I really appreciate you joining me, talking a lot of basketball. We needed something exciting to talk about in the wake of the Packers' misfortunes on Sunday. So it's a fun thing to talk about such a landmark win for Marquette. Appreciate your time, and enjoy all the other radio stations repeating everything you just said to the radio stations of America in the next couple days.
Oh, yeah, it'll be fun. Can't wait. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. We'll have you on again. I'll talk to you real soon. Thanks. Very special thanks to Matt Velasquez for joining us today. You can check out all his work in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers the Marquette Golden Eagles and the Milwaukee Bucks, as we indicated. You should definitely find him on Twitter, very active on Twitter. Wanted to point out a couple things before we got out of here. Wanted to make sure you were reminded of the Roundball Rankings page, mycommunitynow.com/roundball. It's where you'll find our top 15 boys and girls basketball teams each week. We've had some new number ones a few times in the last few weeks, so there's always some movement at the top. Pewaukee boys are still number one. The Germantown girls are new at the top this week, so check that out. Again, mycommunitynow.com/roundball. You can also find our full coverage of all things prep athletics. We're finally getting into the postseason of the winter season a little bit. Swimming conference meets actually begin this weekend. It's pretty early to be thinking postseason, but it is really just around the corner. We're about a week away from kind of the throes of it. You should check out on our sites right now at mycommunitynow.com. You'll find a story by Dan Zielinski about the Martin Luther basketball teams. Boys and girls teams haven't won a conference title between them in a couple decades, and they might actually win both of them this year. They're in a little bit of a renaissance period in the Metro Classic. They got some huge wins, kind of stacked them up, both the boys and girls, the last week and a half. It's been an exciting time for them. So check out that story. You can also find Steve Tietz's story on the Homestead Wrestling Scramble. We talked a couple podcasts ago about how wrestling participation has been suffering a little bit. Well, at Homestead, one of the things they sort of isolated on as being a problem is the fact that you have all these all-day Saturday wrestling meets. So the coaches at Homestead put together some volunteers, run this very efficient tournament on a Friday night, and sort of allows people to enjoy their Saturday a little more. And there have been more tournaments like that popping up. So check out Steve Tietz's column on that, again, at mycommunitynow.com. And thanks for tuning in. You should really check out our podcast if you can on iTunes or Stitcher for your mobile phone. If you have a chance to check us out on iTunes, leave a rating for us. Let us know what you like. If you like what we're doing, you can find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. Or you can find JP Cadoran, the normal co-host, at JP Cadoran. Let them know what you think. And we'd love to hear some feedback. We do not get much feedback. We would love to have as much as possible. We're going to talk more Bucks in the upcoming podcast. We did not touch much on the Packers. Not sure if you really want to hear about the Packers. We can do that. Some off-season looks down the road, but a lot of prep stuff coming up. We've got some great games ahead of us in the basketball scene, and of course, wrestling, swimming, gymnastics, all that getting into the postseason as well. Thanks again for listening to Initial Reaction. JP will be back next week. Take care, everyone.